for this week's three stories you should know, we're going to begin with something serious and move along to something that probably shouldn't be taken so very seriously. My companions in that adventure are Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report. They both join me via Skype. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Always good to be back.
Patrick, you have laid claim to the more serious story, so you're on.
So my story is about Colorado State men's basketball coach Larry Ustashi. And it turns out during the 2013-14 season, he was investigated by his school. The investigation shelf, it documents Ustashi punching and breaking locker room whiteboards, throwing unopened soda cans against walls. One person who works with mental health with the basketball players at Colorado State, he said Ustashi was a, quote, rageaholic. And he said if you dropped a camera inside their program, you would have Rutgers. Now, we all know what happened to Mike Rice, the rageaholic coach there. Rutgers fired him. Colorado State investigators recommended that the school do the same thing with Ustashi, but the school did not do that. It put him on a personal improvement plan. And it did this even though it also told the coach that he was no longer allowed to be alone with his players. Think about this. That is crazy. Now, I am all for employers giving troubled employees support. That's good. That's compassionate. But I don't think you can do that when those same employees are hurting everyone else at the office. And I think the fact that Colorado State went this way speaks to the sort of weird ongoing deference that we pay to sports in our society. You know, we act like it's somehow different than in our workplace. I mean, imagine if Ustashi was like an English professor or something, and he was running his writing workshops by throwing books at the walls and punching holes in whiteboards. He'd be let go, and rightfully so.
Patrick, I have to ask, did you have some sort of listening device or camera in the classroom when I was teaching English?
I did not, and I taught journalism. I mean, hopefully people were staying awake. That was my main concern.
Eric, what do you think about this?
In a vacuum, like, I feel like this is the kind of thing that could potentially just really be applauded. Like, oh, like, they actually tried to help. Like, it was clear this guy had some problems, and they tried to help him. But the things that this guy, you know, has admitted to and is accused of doing are just so heinous. Like, I can't even believe that this guy is still gainfully employed.
I think there should be zero tolerance for this sort of behavior. When a coach is hired, he should be told that he's expected to comport himself as a responsible adult. And now I will return to my fluffy cloud from which I'll observe the Paisley birds delivering candy canes to all the lovely children. It isn't like that in college sports. If you win, you keep your job.
Right.
I still think a lot of people think, oh, that's what a coach is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. That's how you really make guys tough. And to me, there's just a real soft bigotry of low expectations involved with this. It's like we should expect more from these coaches, especially when they're making millions of dollars a year. It's not too much. So when you feel a little bit of a rageaholic fit coming on, take a time out, count to five. Anyone can do that.
That's
it
perfect.
Works for my three-year-old.
All right. My topic is the New York Knicks. So I'm sorry. Forbes has apparently determined that the Knicks are the most valuable franchise in the NBA, even though they're more than a dozen games under 500. This is, of course, partly because they're in New York. The team makes a lot of money from cable TV and various other sources that have nothing to do with their one lost record. Maybe this is a rhetorical question, but have we in fact reached the point where winning games just doesn't matter very much? And does that make obsolete the old theory that the best way for owners to attract more fan interest and make more money is by winning? Eric, what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, we should really dispel this myth that like a team's popularity in large part is based on sort of how successful they are. I think the one sort of exception to all this kind of is the Golden State Warriors, who, you know, have been wildly successful these last 3 years. Even when they were bought in 7 years ago for $450, they were only valued at $350. And now they're valued at $2.6 billion. And guess what? The Warriors might be really bad in 5 or 6 years. They're still going to be worth $2.6 billion. I mean, such it is with team valuations. They're often arbitrary and unexpected.
Because of the just enormous amounts of TV money, because of the revenue sharing, because of getting the public to buy the stadiums, because of having these sort of quasi-monopolies, you know, for all these reasons, you could be James Dolan. The Knicks can never be good. And you're going to make money hand over fist no matter what. Hmm. And let's not forget with Knicks fans, despite them losing, and losing some more, every single year they seem to think they're going to win the championship.
All right, Eric, we've saved your story for last because it might involve a former wrestler and perhaps even some cartoon characters. What do you got for us?
That is quite a tease. Basically, the premise is, what do you get when you cross the world's most popular athlete with a bankable movie star with a mega Hollywood producer? And the answer is hopefully LeBron James. This is the premise of a really interesting ESPN The Magazine story came out this week, written by Pablo Torre. LeBron is in his 14th season in the NBA. The Cavs are the defending champions. He is playing some of his most excellent basketball of his career, but you know, he wants to be the Rock. You know, he wants to be starring in these movies. He wants to be producing. He wants his impact on the world to be great and to reach out in all these different directions. And I say bring it on. I welcome my impending LeBron James overlord. You know, we think about, you know, what Michael Jordan has been sort of post his career. I think that, you know, that it is limitless for LeBron James, and I'm all for it.
I'm going to be thinking about the phrase impact on the world for some time now. But some former basketball players managed to actually have an impact on the world. Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, people like that. But okay, if LeBron wants to make movies like Michael Jordan did and sort of shadow box with Bugs Bunny or something, I, you know, what the heck? Maybe I'll have grandchildren one day and they'll go see it. It'll be fine, I guess.
I'm just hoping that, you know, there's a peaceful transition of power from the Rock administration to the LeBron James administration 10 or 15 years down the road. I think what's interesting about LeBron is you see him sort of trying to leverage his celebrity into areas where his celebrity can make him even more money and sort of get him even more influence. That's kind of the coin of the realm now in America. You know, looking at the White House, celebrity really, really matters. I think Kobe is trying to basically do the same thing. So I'm also looking forward to 10 years from now, like really tedious, like barstool arguments about who has the better entertainment company, Kobe or LeBron.
Are we going to get movies like, you know, an old Sylvester Stallone against an old Robert De Niro, except it's going to be LeBron versus Kobe? Like, that would be all worth it, in my opinion.
Now I'm picturing Heat 2 with LeBron and Kobe in the diner.
My guests this week have been Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.